Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning, live from Bonn in Germany. These are our main stories. Demonstrations broke out on Tuesday evening in Kenya's largest slum, Kibera, in the capital Nairobi. And our correspondent James Shimayula joins us live.
Police say engaged the residents of the area in running battles. They had started burning tires. Things got out of hand, forcing security personnel to impose a curfew.
Ethiopia says it will not escalate border clashes with Eritrea.
We have sent a sufficiently clear message to the regime in Asmara.
And the Nigerian foreign minister tells DW how the government in Abuja is working to stop migration.
We know that if we can deal with the question of security, that's certainly going to not create the environment, you know, to push people out of the country.
Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I am Abubakar Jallo, and I hope you'd stick around for these stories.
Top story.
Demonstrations erupted in Kenya's largest slum, Kibera, on Tuesday evening over footage appearing to show a senior member of the ruling Jubilee Party saying top opposition leader Raila Odinga can be assassinated. This was followed by an order by a Kenyan court for the arrest of 8 pro-government and opposition politicians for investigation over alleged hate speech. James Shimayula joins me now from Nairobi. James, can you start by describing what happened in Kibera on Tuesday evening?
First of all, tension is still very high in Kibera after the arrest of 8 politicians belonging to the opposition party as well as the ruling party Jubilee. Now, the 8 politicians, as I said, include those from the opposition, and Kibera being one of the strongholds, political strongholds of opposition leader Raila Odinga, burst into kind of chaos when police engaged the residents of the area in running battles. They had started burning tires. They were actually running up and down in the area, blocking roads. Things got out of hand, forcing security personnel to impose a curfew. And it may continue today, Wednesday.
Can you tell us who started this? Where did it all begin?
In fact, what happened is that immediately after residents of Kibera, as you say, the largest slum area in Nairobi, heard that politicians belonging to the opposition cord led by Raila Odinga had been arrested for making hate speeches in public rallies, that is when the protest started. They were actually angry that the people that were supposed to be arrested should have been others and not those belonging to CORD.
So who are these politicians?
Well, we have from the Jubilee, we have Moses Kuria. And Moses Kuria has been outspoken and very controversial. He has faced at least, I think, 3 cases or 4 cases of making hate speeches. And then on the side of the opposition called the party, we have Johnson Mudhama, one of the leaders of CORD. He has been outspoken throughout, and his utterances have landed him in court before.
James, can you briefly describe the situation this morning in Kibera? How does it look like?
It's quiet, but tense. People waking up after a night of curfew, something that has never happened in Kibera. Maybe it happened during the colonial days, or it happened during the 2007 post-election violence. But then things were not as they are now with the imposition of curfew. Patrols have been intensified as we speak.
Just to clarify this, James, the curfew that you are talking about is only limited to Kibera, but not the rest of Nairobi, is it?
No, it's only Kibera. It's been slumped on Kibera, a suburb southwest of Nairobi. I mean, it's one of the strongholds of Raila Odinga, of the opposition party. In fact, it is the area that made him to become a politician for many, many years.
James Shimayula in Nairobi. There are growing tensions in the Horn of Africa between Ethiopia and Eritrea after both countries accused each other of invasion of territories. This comes after a two-day counter-offensive that took place in the Tsorona Central Front. The Ethiopian government has confirmed there were casualties on both sides and has warned of further reprisals should Asmara resume fighting. From Addis Ababa, Koleta Wanjohi reports.
Early Sunday morning, fighting was reported between soldiers of Ethiopia and Eritrea in the border region of Tsorona. The Eritrean government released a press statement blaming the Ethiopian government for starting the fight. However, the Minister for Communication, Getachew Reda, told press representatives in Addis Ababa that Ethiopia reacted to provocation by Eritrea.
We have sent a sufficiently clear message to the regime in Asmara. That's not going to be a cakewalk for them to continue to destabilize or to try to destabilize our country.
Ethiopians, especially those living in border region with Eritrea, are worried of a possible escalation of the fighting. Ethiopia and Eritrea have both failed to uphold the agreement on cessation of hostilities they signed in Algiers on 18th June 2000. The agreement demanded that the parties permanently terminate military hostilities. Years later, tensions between the Horn of Africa nations persist. Minister Reda says the fighting was quelled in the afternoon of Monday, with casualties on both sides. He warns Ethiopia will react in the same way again if Eritrea attempts another offensive.
The next course of action entirely depends on what the regime in Asmara decides to do next. If they still think they can do something to even the score or anything like that, then they will be forcing our hands to attack again. And it is our hope and expectation that they won't do that.
Eritrea won independence from Ethiopia in 1991. It fought a bloody border war with Ethiopia between 1998 and 2000. Eritrea and Ethiopia routinely accuse each other of backing rebels, trying to destabilize and topple the other's government.
Koleta Wanjohi in Addis Ababa, and you're listening to DW's Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Now, the Nigerian Foreign Minister Geoffrey Onyema is in Germany and he will today meet his German counterpart, Frank-Walter Steinmeier. The two will discuss, among other issues, Nigerian migrants in Germany. My colleague Jenna Ekukume sat with him in our studios and started by asking him what the German government was offering his country to keep Nigerians at home.
I think their issue, to be fair, is the question of irregular migrants. The main issue is repatriation and how we can work on an agreeable and dignified manner of repatriating the irregular migrants. So that's really what we're looking at together.
Do you already have an idea of something concrete that the German government is offering?
One of the sticking points really is documentation, because you see, sometimes these irregular migrants destroy their documentation. So we believe in the exhaustion of legal remedies. We also look at just the humanitarian side as well. So if, for instance, an individual has family here, some of these are elements that might be also considered within the framework of the law.
My very last question on the issue of migration, without thinking that it's only a German initiative, how about back home? What is your government doing to minimize an increase of a flow of young Nigerians coming not only to Germany probably, but the European world?
Well, that's a much larger issue. It's a whole question of governance and development. This particular government is focused very much on the causes of these outflow of Nigerians. And we feel that it really requires a holistic approach. So, for instance, the three priorities of this government is security. It's the issue of governance, corruption and so forth, and also job creation. So we know that if we can deal with the question of security, that's certainly going to not create the environment, you know, to push people out of the country. And we know also that once we can really get the economy moving, lifting people out of poverty, providing jobs for our youth and so forth, that push factor to emigrate.
Let's tackle something different, and it's about the Niger Delta region. I would like to hear from you. The Niger Delta conflict and the attacks have caused some kind of petrol price turbulence in the global market. How has been your government tackling this issue?
There's a process, an ongoing process at the moment of engagement, and hopefully it will yield positive results, because it's not good for the community and it's not good for the country. It's a lose-lose situation for everybody concerned.
Let's talk about corruption very briefly. We know that this is not a subject that we can exhaust now as far as your country is concerned, but critics have voiced concerns that the current government is actually targeting former officers, I mean officers of the former government. Is this true? If so, what do you have to say about it?
It's not true at all, actually. It really is a case of getting the evidence and following the evidence. And wherever it leads, you know, the authorities will go in that direction.
Mr. Minister, my very final question. Your government had threatened to investigate or to launch investigations on the former president, Jonathan Goodluck. Has it done so?
It's not a personal thing. The facts are there. You know, a lot of the countries, Western countries, for instance, are giving us information, you know, about accounts in their countries and are offering us assistance, you know, to in restituting the money that they have in their countries. So a lot of the information is actually not even coming from within the country. I think the important thing is this: the numbers, the amounts that we're talking about, you know, are huge, you know, really, really huge, and would make a significant difference in the context of our present economic plight. So we have every interest in getting those resources. And for us, it's not about personalizing it. And in fact, a lot of people are criticizing the government because we have not named the individuals that have returned a lot of the money. So if it was something that was personal, the government would name and shame, you know, all these individuals and prosecute them also. But I think what we've made clear is that our priority is the people, and to get their resources, it's their commonwealth, back to the country to help in the development process.
Nigerian Foreign Minister Geoffrey Onyema. And still to come, will Germany accept it committed genocide in Namibia about 100 years ago?
Behind the headlines.
Now, faced with one of the worst droughts in living memory in Ethiopia, pastoralists from Somali region headed hundreds of kilometers to the coast of Somaliland after rumors of rain there last November. But the gamble didn't pay off. Now, they are heading back home in Ethiopia, a complex crawl through the desert of Somaliland with their weakened livestock struggling to continue and some collapsing from exhaustion. James Jeffrey has more.
It's not often you see a group of usually independent Somali-Ethiopian pastoralists line up in an orderly queue. But after sudden heavy rains led to the deaths of precious livestock, these pastoralists were only too willing to receive large orange tarpaulins. The goats and sheep had been weakened from months of travel. Two vehicles from the Dublin-based charity Concern Worldwide had come all this way into the deserts, with dozens of tarpaulins aboard for pastoralists to use against further rains. The last few months have not been kind to these people and their animals, 70-year-old Kayabo Lidler tells me.
It rained heavily last night and our remaining goats died. Each family lost about 70. We've received some support from the local community and the regional government. In my 60 years, I've never seen such a drought. The impact of previous droughts was limited.
The borders between Ethiopia, Somaliland and Djibouti have little significance to ethnic Somali pastoralists in the Horn of Africa. Living off the land, they and their livestock roam where they need to, searching for all-important water and pastures. Last November, they responded to rumours of rains and good pasture hundreds of kilometres away in the way they know best, with their feet, taking them to the coast of Somaliland, an internationally unrecognised but a self-governing nation that broke away from Somalia in 1991. But there wasn't enough rain or pasture for the numbers that descended on the coast. Thousands of livestock died along the way, caused by disease breaking out among mingling herds. The ones that survived now have to overcome the torturous crawl with their owners through Somaliland's barren Aldaw region to get back to home in Ethiopia. Atosh Abdile lost half of his livestock.
We went to the coast from Ethiopia. I have never had that number of animals. I used to own 100 goats and sheep. Now I have only 50 left. Some are so weak I have to carry them. They won't make it back. Perhaps 30 will die getting back to Ethiopia.
Traversing the Ethiopia-Somaliland border, it's unclear whose responsibility the forsaken pastoralists are. Ethiopia's government is busy enough, confronting a double blow of drought and ethnic Oromo protests. The Somaliland government has tried mitigating the crisis by trucking some pastoralists and their herds to the Ethiopian border to shorten journeys. But operating on a tiny budget, lack of international recognition has massive financial drawbacks. The government is severely limited in its capabilities. Hence, many pastoralists have to go it alone and take their chances under the unrelenting sun to save what little they still have. Local Somalilanders living in the Aldaw region have also been hit by the drought. In Jerjer village, most of the 300 inhabitants have lost livestock and crops. 35-year-old Hapon has to find a way to feed her five children. Some women have as many as 10 children to worry about.
Our life became more stressful. We became more confused. I lost everything. Now I'm worried for my children and myself. One of the most stressful things is that previously, when I would fetch water, I used a donkey, but I lost it. It's a six-hour walk, three there and three to come back. Initially, I asked the neighbors for help. Now I'm carrying a 20-litre jerry can to fetch water.
At Magalo Hayad village in neighbouring Gabele region, food and water ran out in February and villagers had to rely on water truck deliveries to survive. But no matter how hard life gets, there are not many other options, says the head of the village, 40-year-old Badari Adam.
It's difficult to live here, but it's our environment. We can't go elsewhere. We own the land here, and it's our family's land. We used to be pastoralists, but 20 years ago, we settled here as agro-pastoralists. All the other villages around us are in the same position. There's nowhere else to go. And we can't go to the big cities like Hargeisa. We are a nomadic people and rural people. We can't survive there. We only know how to rear livestock and grow crops.
Back on the southward trail being taken by pastoralists returning to Ethiopia, carcasses of lone goats are dotted along the route, throats cut by owners who chose to sacrifice slow-goers for the sake of the rest of the herd. Some pastoralists have lost more than 500 livestock, their entire way of life wiped out. But they don't appear to have lost a mindset that is hard to contemplate from an outsider's perspective. Even those who lost animals worth millions of Ethiopian birr are capable of giving a philosophical chuckle and assessment when considering the disaster.
James Jeffrey reporting. Pressure is mounting on Germany's parliament to admit the killing in its former colony, German South West Africa, today's Namibia, as genocide. Just over 100 years ago, between 1904 and 1908, German troops killed more than 60,000 Hereros and Namas after they revolted against colonial rule. So far, Germany has never officially accepted that it committed genocide at that time, but 2 weeks ago, the German parliament recognized genocide perpetrated by another country. It passed a motion that described mass killings by Ottoman forces in Armenia in 1915 as genocide. So now opposition lawmakers and even the Speaker of Germany's parliament are urging not just to criticize others, but to also clean up its own house. From Berlin, Daniel Pels reports.
It was none other than Norbert Lammert, the Speaker of Germany's lower house of parliament, the Bundestag, who unleashed this latest round of public debate about Germany's colonial past. Speaking on German public television ZDF, Lammert evidently felt his country was guilty of double standards.
Dass es dazu nicht eine ähnlich unmissverständliche Erklärung auf deutscher Seite gibt.
I find it regrettable, embarrassing, that there is no declaration from Germany about Namibia that is as clear as the one about Armenia. On the other hand, I want to point out that we had a debate about it last year in Parliament, and I paid a visit to Namibia afterwards. That helped to initiate a dialogue process between our two countries.
Various opposition lawmakers have publicly supported Norbert Lammert's initiative. Uwe Kerkeritz, a member of parliament for the opposition Greens, told the Berliner Zeitung Daily that parliament should now acknowledge as soon as possible that the mass killings in the former German colony were indeed genocide. That would be a signal that Germany was not shying away from its historic responsibilities, he told the paper. In the past, the German parliament has lacked the necessary resolve to send such a signal. Various motions that called the mass killings in today's Namibia genocide were defeated. Also speaking on ZDF, opposition lawmaker Hans Christian Ströbele explained why.
Immer nach dem Motto, wenn wir da einmal anfangen.
The thinking was that if we start owning up to crimes from our colonial past, we'd become liable for compensation or reparations. And where would that end?
Wo kommen wir dann hin?
Lawmakers are now calling for yet another draft genocide motion. Separately, however, official talks between Germany and Namibia came to a halt this week. The dialogue about their common history and how to resolve outstanding issues began earlier this year. It was supposed to resume in Namibia's capital Windhoek this week. But according to Germany's national broadcaster Deutschlandfunk, Namibia's government requested a postponement. The government is under intense pressure from some Herero and Nama groups. Israel Kanal Jike is a Herero activist based in Berlin. He says the ethnic groups deserve a more dominant role in the talks.
We want to negotiate with the German government directly. The Namibian government can only act as a sort of mediator. After all, the victims of the genocide were the Herero and Nama.
Despite the setback, the German government says it's confident that the talks at government level will be concluded by the end of the year. The long-awaited German parliamentary motion acknowledging that the killings were genocide could well be approved long before that, if public and media pressure persists.
DW's Daniel Pelz in Berlin.
Opinion.
Earlier on the program, we heard the Nigerian Foreign Minister Geoffrey Onyema telling us about the outside help the government of President Muhammadu Buhari was receiving in fighting corruption.
Western countries, for instance, are giving us information, you know, about accounts in their countries and are offering us assistance, you know, in restituting the money that they have in their countries. So a lot of the information is actually not even coming from within the country. I think the important thing is this. The numbers, the amounts that we're talking about, you know, are huge, you know, really, really huge, and would make a significant difference in the context of our present economic plight.
What do you think of those remarks? Do they convince you that Nigeria is serious about eradicating corruption? Send us your opinion on this story or any of the stories that we've covered via text message to +491609575950. Or you can also send us an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or also a letter to AfricaLink DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. And before we leave you, a quick recap of the main stories. Demonstrations broke out on Tuesday evening in Kenya's largest slum, Kibera, in the capital Nairobi, and we heard from our correspondent James Shumayula. Ethiopia says it will not escalate border clashes with Eritrea. Nigeria's foreign minister says the government in Abuja is working very hard to discourage migration, that is Nigerians, coming to Europe to seek for asylum. And there, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. And as always, thank you for listening. Until tomorrow, my name is Abubakar Jallo in Bonn. Bye now.